This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off, Skip.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and wrong. Here is Steve Gruber.
Well, the mainstream media, as I told you they would, is going out and trumpeting. Hillary Clinton is the winner of Monday night's debate, although several online polls, non-scientific as they may be, Time magazine had 2 million people check in so far. Says Donald Trump won the debate, 55% to 45%, and numerous other sources say the same thing. A CNN flash poll said that Hillary Clinton, 62% of those asked thought Hillary Clinton had won the debate. For those that tuned in for 30, 40 minutes, Donald Trump crushed her, because that's when he was taking her on with NAFTA and free trade and jobs in the upper Midwest and the Rust Belt states. Certainly didn't slow him down yesterday. 12,000 people plus turned out in Melbourne, Florida for a rally. Donald Trump coming to Michigan on Friday. We have new polling numbers, by the way. We're going to share with you in a little bit here. Says Hillary Clinton still leading here in Michigan. The race is tight, but how tight is it? You'll have to wait and find that out. Meanwhile, 50 former Bush administration members are endorsing Donald Trump, which, you know, kind of flies in the face of the whole Bush family. You know, George H.W. Bush and Jeb Bush said they won't support Donald Trump, even though Jeb Bush said he would. But Ari Fleischer, former Attorney General John Ashcroft, former Labor Secretary Elaine Chao, Secretary John Snow, Political Director Matt Schlapp, Donald Rumsfeld, and a whole host of other folks saying they support Donald Trump and are going to go with it. A couple of other things that came up in Monday night's debate that I want to explore a little bit further here with you this morning. The stamina, the look. A new poll suggests those were a couple of the comments Donald Trump made about Hillary Clinton's health, stamina, her presidential look. A new poll suggests voters are buying in to Donald Trump's insinuations about Hillary Clinton's health. Voters, especially men, have more confidence that Trump is healthy enough for the presidency than Clinton, according to a brand new Associated Press poll done in association with GFK. Now, the AP goes on into their third paragraph to begin defending Hillary Clinton. It's a disconnect, considering Clinton has released more medical information than Trump. Has she? Because some people, a lot of doctors, question that information that was put out. But it shows the political points Trump scored after the Democratic nominee's much-publicized mild case of pneumonia. No, I'm sorry, AP, she collapsed and was dragged into a van in what appeared to be in some less than fully conscious state. Another gender divide, nearly half of women, but just 4 in 10 men think Clinton's health is getting too much attention. Everybody gets sick, says Sherry Smart of New York. She said she hasn't decided who to vote for, but wishes the candidates would discuss issues instead of sniping about who is more vigorous. What's more important, she said, is what are you going to do for me? Yeah, that's unfortunately what people think. What are you doing for me? The AP poll found that 51% of voters are extremely confident that Trump is healthy to be president. In contrast, just 36% feel the same way about Hillary Clinton. Men much more likely to question Clinton's physical fitness for the job, with 45% saying they're only slightly or not at all confident, compared to 34% of women. Health is a legitimate issue as the nation is poised to elect one of its oldest presidents. Trump is 70, Hillary Clinton 69. Stamina is a code word for not physically capable to do the job, said New York University bioethicist Arthur Kaplan. There is something of a bias, he says, about men versus women that subtly Donald Trump has played to, that men are more fit, tough enough to do the job. And there is the fact that Donald Trump didn't collapse on camera. There is the fact that Donald Trump didn't collapse and get dragged into a van with his toes pointed backwards, slumped over. There is that point. Don't miss that point in the big scheme of things. Also, a big miss for Donald Trump on Monday, I believe, is the miss that he didn't point out the fact when Hillary Clinton was touting how violent crime has gone down and it's time for all these great things and so on and so forth. In the last 2 years, violent crime in America has actually gone up dramatically. In the wake of all of these things going on around the country and this movement against police and law and order in general around the country has had real effect. Homicides in the United States went up by more than 10% in 2015 over 2014. Violent crime increased by nearly 4% in the same period. That is the biggest jump in violent crime in a couple of decades. That, according to the FBI's summary of crime figures. The long-awaited FBI report was released amid heightened security of violent crime in the U.S., propelled by an increase in homicides in a number of major cities and repeated comments from Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. The report shows that there was an overall increase in violent crime last year, making clear what each of us already knows, that we still have so much work to do, said Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Violent crime endangers lives. No kidding. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Destroys families and paralyzes neighborhoods. That's right, Loretta. That's why we need law and order. That's why we need to support our police departments. That's right, Loretta. While the FBI released its statistics on 2015, nearly 10 months after the year ended, a debate over crime has been raging based on the number of cities where homicides have gone up and, in some cases, surged dramatically. Surged dramatically. Why? Because police in many places have, in effect, either been officially or unofficially told to stand down. Police are backing up. In an analysis last week, the Brennan Center for Justice, a law and policy institute, found that Chicago, for example, has accounted for a remarkable share of the increase in homicides nationwide among big cities, just as it found that Chicago, Washington, and Baltimore saw most of that increase in 2015. Americans are generally worried that crime is going up nationwide, though Gallup polling dating back nearly three decades shows that Americans almost always think crime is going up, even when it's declining. But in this particular case, there seems to be some real evidence, in 2015 that crime has gone up. But here's what the Democrats turned to. In 2015, there were an estimated 372 violent crimes per 100,000 residents. In 1995, an estimated 685 violent crimes per 100,000 residents. I guess that cutting the crime rate by 40% since Bill Clinton was president can be attributed in large part to people being allowed to defend themselves with concealed pistol licenses and such, and the Bill Clinton crime bill of 1995, the thing that's now referred to as the mass incarceration bill, the root of Black Lives Matter and so forth. Bill Clinton's crime bill worked. So does carrying a concealed weapon to protect yourself. Gun ownership apparently works as well. These two things in conjunction have lowered crime in America. At least the statistics seem to indicate that. Back in a moment.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Head out on the highway, looking for adventure.
You know, I don't know what to make of the fallout from the first debate on Monday. Two disliked candidates. I mean, really disliked candidates. Neither one is popular. Hillary Clinton claiming victory, as is Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton backed up by some polls, as is Donald Trump by some others. 12,000 people turned out for Donald Trump at a rally in Melbourne, Florida yesterday. Earlier in the day, about 1,400 turned out for Hillary Clinton in North Carolina. Donald Trump on his way to Michigan this coming Friday to be at Novi. That event begins at 5 o'clock. Doors open at 2, just checking it here. But according to one of those people that watched the debate, when it came to terrorism, There were two candidates and two really lousy responses. Trevor Thrall, senior fellow at the Cato Institute's Defense and Foreign Policy Department. Trevor, welcome back.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. So, all right, two candidates, two bad responses. Tell me.
Well, you know, I think we've seen what we're going to see from these two candidates when it comes to terrorism. When Trump talks, you know, a lot of reassuring, tough talk about how he's going to get after the terrorists. But unfortunately, it comes with a large helping of civil liberty killing approaches to policing and the unconstitutional, you know, thoughts about how to deal with terrorists.
Now, hold on. You know, in fairness, stop and frisk may have been taken down in New York City, but it wasn't taken down in a variety of places around the country. So to say that it's unconstitutional across the board is not accurate. I'm not saying that to you necessarily, but it is inaccurate.
Absolutely. I think there are probably ways you could make stop and frisk constitutional for sure. But that's not the only thing, as we know, Trump has talked about over time. Databases, you know, monitoring.
Oh, you mean like, hold on, you mean like it's going on already?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so Donald Trump's talking about what Barack Obama and before him George W. Bush have done to us for a dozen years anyhow.
Indeed so. Let's not pretend that we've just discovered the idea of destroying civil liberty.
If not for Snowden, none of us would really know how much into what detail this was going on. But it is going on. Edward Snowden let us know that. Whether you think he's a criminal or a hero, the fact of the matter is if Edward Snowden hadn't spilled his guts, we wouldn't know a lot about what's going on with the
absolutely
monitoring
true
of you and I every day. I mean, can you imagine if you go stand on a street corner in any decent-sized city in America, how many cameras are you on at that time? How many?
You know, I shudder to even imagine. I know here in D.C. where I'm at, there's a website you can go to that has pictures of all these or a lot of these hidden cameras, and you realize on your walk to work, you are monitored the whole way. It's quite bracing.
Yeah, so, it's spectacularly frightening in an Orwellian way.
It really is.
Yeah,
and,
go ahead.
You know, and frankly, so, you know, that's Trump's stuff. He wants to get tough. Unfortunately, I think most of the things he's talking about are not things that are going to produce, you know, much in the way of new results. But they're going to do a lot to, you know, further the Big Brother agenda. Clinton, on the other hand, sort of has doubled down on some of the same things, different language, I think. But after the Rouhani bombings, she talked about an intelligence surge. Well, I don't know exactly what the heck she means by intelligence surge.
Well, apparently it didn't happen in her office. Go on.
Yeah, but it sounds to me like code for an awful lot of the same stuff. More surveillance, more, you know, prying into people's lives to find out things that mostly they probably shouldn't know. But then she combines that with a call for accelerated intervention in Syria and the rest of the Middle East to deal with the terrorists who purportedly, you know, are plotting over there to get us, even though most of the problem we're dealing with is people living here in America. So I don't think either candidate's really giving us much hope that they're going to have a better plan.
Let's dispel one myth, though, about constitutional rights and what you don't have. This whole notion that somehow when Donald Trump says, let's stop immigration of refugees from countries that are suspect or have suspect populations or that we cannot properly vet, well, that's unconstitutional. No, in fact, it's entirely in the realm of the president's constitutional power to do exactly that and stop an influx of people that could potentially be a danger and harmful to our population. That is, well, that's part of his duty to protect the country, is it not?
I think you're right. I think the question there is not one of constitutional you know, correctness necessarily, but it's really more a question of balancing the pros and cons of the situation. You know, it's a numbers game. Very hard to shut down immigration for economic reasons. The economic benefit of immigration to the United States is very high. And the question then is
stop right there. Yeah, it is very high from certain places, and they're not all equal. To say that people that come from, you know, one country are equal in value to people who come from another country, I would dispute that. I would think that they all have relative value based on the skill sets that they bring with them. And I don't think you can make a blanket statement like that.
Sure. Yeah, no, but I think the general point there is that you need to, there's a balancing game going on. However you want to vet, the idea is that you're going to let some people in because it's going to be good for the country, and then you're always going to be taking a risk if you let anyone in. Who are they? What are they going to do when they get here? And so you know, I think everyone agrees that careful vetting is crucial. And I think, you know, Trump and Clinton differ on where they're going to put that bar. But I don't think anyone questions that there needs to be a bar somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think that, well, the drone war isn't working very well so far. We need real-time intelligence on the ground to defend overseas. To work here, there's going to have to be something, Trevor, and there's going to have to be some intrusion. I don't know how far it can go because, you know, if you trade liberty for freedom, you end up with neither, or for safety, you get neither. Yeah. I'll give you the 30 seconds for the last word, though, because we don't want to see continued terrorist attacks in America either. So what do you do? 30 seconds.
Well, I'm afraid I'm a little bit more pessimistic about the prospects for getting rid of terrorism. I think if we take a look at how much terrorism there is in the United States, the answer is, thankfully, not very much. And so I don't believe that there's a very strong argument for doing a lot more intrusion and threatening of civil liberties to try to reduce the number from not very much to zero, because I just don't think that's possible.
All right. Trevor Thrall from the Cato Institute, thank you as always.
Thanks, Steve.
There you have it. Trevor Thrall here on the program. If you'd like to respond, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966, back after this.
Covering Michigan and the world from his bunker below the bridge, here is Steve Gruber.
All right, 33 after on this Wednesday. Glad to have you on board. If you'd like to join the conversation, do so at 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. You can also go to stevegruber.com to listen live, hear the podcast, or follow us on Facebook, The Steve Gruber Show, and on Twitter as well. Some would argue that all of the intervention of the government into our lives, which is more and more and more, it seems, all of the time, whether they're telling us how much water we can use when we flush a toilet, or what kind of light bulbs we can buy, or pretty much anything else we try to make a decision on, the government's right there. And the question is liberalism turning us into communists? And I think the answer is yes. I mean, we're sliding in a direction of control and government intervention into our lives. It's unprecedented. I'll let my next guest expand on that. Alexander Markovsky, a Russian immigrant born and educated in the Soviet Union. Alex, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So, I mean, I watch this every day, and I watch the American experiment in government going awry as things like the Second Amendment and the First Amendment come under fire every day. People get their feelings hurt, so we can't say this, we can't say that. And then you've got the government watching everything we do with cameras and monitoring our cell phones and our computers and everything else, all under the so-called Patriot Act. What do you make of it?
Well, I've been inside that monster, and I know him well. For half of my life, I lived in those conditions. When government tells you what to do, where to work, how to educate your children, how much you can make, where you can go, where you can, what medicine you can use, and on and on and on, just like you listed above. You know, I'm very well familiar with those conditions.
You refer
That's
to,
why I'm here.
Yeah, you refer to Barack Obama, and I don't disagree with you on this, as the most consequential president in the last 100 years, potentially, and not in a good way, as he continues to pull the Democratic Party towards Marxist ideology. And Bernie Sanders, another example of that Marxist ideology, pulling America to the left, putting 25,000 people into arenas and so forth. Not only are we heading towards Marxist ideology, young people and old alike are standing there cheering for this disaster.
Well, that's the power of communism. That's the power of Marxism, because they offer something for nothing, and poorly educated people go for it. That's if you read my book, you know, I said that socialism cannot be defeated. It self-destructs.
Like Venezuela.
I'm sorry?
Like Venezuela. Socialism doesn't get defeated. It self-destructs, like Venezuela, like we're witnessing right now.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
All right, so let me ask you this. How do we get a political wake-up call It seems that Donald Trump is trying to raise that bell, but Donald Trump, not exactly everybody's cup of tea. So what do you do to wake up the sleeping masses? What do you do to get the attention of these children, these millennials, that have been taught that these Marxist policies and principles are a good thing?
Well, as you well know, you know, the left spent at least for the last 50 years re-educate our children. And they educate according to their children. So it took about 50, maybe perhaps 70 years, you know, to change American psyche. So you can't turn it around overnight. And the latest debate, you know, what was it, yesterday, the day before yesterday, demonstrated clearly how difficult it is and how appealing socialist idea are. For example, Donald Trump read my book, he would have known that global warming is not a hoax, it is a global fraud, that NATO had exhausted its usefulness, that radical Islam can be defeated by new alliance, that arming our allies with nuclear weapons actually make a lot of sense, and his economic plan needs major upgrade. Otherwise, he did well, you can say.
Well.
And the other side, what's the other side offer? More poverty, more equality in poverty, more chaos, more demagoguery and lies.
More equalized misery is what it becomes, right? I mean, it's not that anybody gets lifted up, it's that everybody gets dragged further down, and therefore you have less of everything, and therefore you equalize misery. You're
exactly right. You know, when they talk about equality, equality can only be in poverty. There is no equality in wealth.
Yeah.
That's what we have to understand.
You know, and demonizing success is what we've done in America, and it's happened for some time. When you get to, we encourage our children to go to school and then to go to college and to do well. But when they do well to a certain point, then we start demonizing them. Well, they're the rich. They're the one percenters, those bastards. We need to get what they've got. We need to take it away from them. Now, let me get this straight. You encourage these children to excel and to do well, to become doctors and lawyers and architects and engineers. And when they did that, they made a tremendous amount of money because their skill set is in great demand to build buildings and to do heart surgery and to save people's lives and so on and so forth. But when they do that, then we demonize these people. I mean, what the hell is wrong with us?
Well, we've got that bacteria, socialist bacteria, and we attacked capital. Well, to look at the last debate, how viciously capital being attacked. We say we're going to put higher taxes on the rich, half of us is rich. So if we put in more taxes, we put more regulations, we actually encourage or actually force capital to move out of this country. And the more capital moves out country, we're going to get rich because they move out? That's nonsense.
Well, let me ask you something. Donald Trump mentioned that there's $3 or $4 trillion in capital, maybe more, parked offshore from America because companies won't bring it back, individuals won't bring it back because it'll get taxed so heavily. He said there should be a way to encourage all that money to come home to help build America. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. And what Hillary proposed exactly the opposite. She said, well, we raise the taxes so more capital will move out.
Yeah, Ayn Rand had that one pegged now, didn't she? Ayn Rand had that one pegged exactly. If you keep taxing and regulating, those that can get out, get out. And when they leave, they take their skill set and their money with them, correct?
Exactly right. So we don't have investment.
That's right. And you also don't have their skill set. You lose some of the most imaginative minds, some of the most talented people just get up and leave because they have that flexibility. Alex Markovsky, former Soviet citizen and a witness to what's going on in America. Give me 30 seconds. Give me your final thoughts today. What do you think? I was giving you 30 seconds for your last word there.
My last word is, and you ask people, you know, whom to vote, whether it's Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, that's a wrong question. We have to vote for capitalism or we vote for socialism. We vote for the country that promote freedom, or we work, we work for slavery. We work for getting rich, or we're getting voting for equality in poverty.
That's all right.
The issue at this election, not Donald Trump or Hillary.
Alex Markowski, thank you very much for the conversation.
Thank you for inviting me.
There you have it. It is 41 after on a Wednesday.
The Steve Gruber Show, American values with Midwestern common sense.
Welcome back to it on a Wednesday. It depends on where you look, but there is indication now that Donald Trump, with his outreach in places like Detroit and Cleveland and Miami, is getting the attention of potential black voters and Hispanic voters. In fact, some indications from polls show that Donald Trump has gotten 20% of African-American votes in some places, better than 30% of some Hispanic precincts. And if you saw what happened in Miami yesterday, it was a love fest with Hispanic supporters of Donald Trump with the candidate there before his get-together in Melbourne, Florida, that attracted 12,000 people. My next guest has kind of a front-row seat to all this, Bishop Aubrey Shines, the founder of Glory to Glory Ministries from Florida. Aubrey, welcome back.
Always great being with you, my friend. Thanks for having me.
All right, so give me an idea of what you're seeing in Florida. Yesterday, big turnout for Trump. The Hispanics, I mean, it was a love fest.
Well, I can tell you, and I've been saying this and screaming this for a long time now, this is exactly what's going to happen. Blacks have finally begun, not because of the media, not because of CNN, NBC, and all these guys, because they're not giving this information, but there are groups like mine, and forgive me if that sounds a bit egomaniacal, we're putting out information, Steve. Unemployment in the black community since this failed president, up 8%, 58%, my friend, of more blacks on food stamps. Since this failed, feckless president, blacks are feeling the pinch. And so they're constantly being told, oh, how great things are going to be and how great things are. And they're hearing these things from Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. It's not resonating. And this is why the DNC party, they're flipping their wigs. This is why Barack goes out, which is very insulting, by the way, to say to the black community that if you don't elect Hillary Clinton, my legacy is going to be lost. Even, and I never quote this guy, Steve, by the way, but even Louis Farrakhan, Louis Farrakhan has come out and said the only thing that this president has done is cater to the homosexual community, but he's done nothing for the black community. Yet they're not even playing that major piece as much on media, on the major media outlets. This guy, Trump, my friend, is resonating, and you're going to see those poll numbers very, very high among blacks that are voting for him.
All right, so you think that it's actually going to break through, because I can tell you this, and I've said this to the listeners. You know, there's been outreach to different communities over time, but there certainly wasn't this sort of embrace for Mitt Romney, for God's sake, or John McCain. Donald Trump actually making inroads, it seems, which is new territory for a Republican, at least recently.
You know, Steve, I tried with a few conservative friend groups of mine to have Romney to reach out. Romney's message, the GOP message, has always been fantastic for Americans, period, whether you're black or white. They just, for whatever the reasons, and we got the news from the Romney camp during the time, what they had really done in a nutshell was they had kind of calculated, like a great investment, I get it, but I just think it was ill-placed. They assumed, well, you know, blacks are going to historically vote for the Democratic Party. Why should we spend millions of dollars in that community? And we were just simply saying, don't even spend the millions. Have meetings with, but don't go to these silly groups like the NAACP. They're historic groups. They no longer are relevant. Their numbers don't even reflect blacks in the community. Don't go to guys like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. You're not going to be welcome there, Mitt. Well, Donald Trump, I'm telling you, this guy gets it. He's going into the cities. He's having these meetings. And again, remember, even the pastor that he met with in the state of Michigan, I've known that guy since 1995. He's one of my best friends on this earth, Bishop Wayne T. Jackson. That guy is still, to this day, a registered Democrat. But I can tell you, these guys are looking at Donald Trump. Why? Because Trump has the business savvy to go into these places and say, hey, look, if you're just nice and fair to me, I'll come in and let's talk. It's working.
So just give me a shake. Just listen. Give me an opportunity, which I think is something that has not been done. We're on with Bishop Aubrey Shines here. All right. So does it translate on Election Day? That's my question. Did you watch the debate?
Yes.
Did you make any inroads? I mean, he was talking about the problems facing the inner cities, the fact that there's trouble out there, and all you get out of it is, well, Donald Trump said that black people are living in hell and they're from hell. That's not what he said.
Of course. And again, blacks are not crazy. Steve, I'm in constant contact with guys that were once 100% supporters of the DNC party all their lives. These are guys that are now 40, 50, 60 years of age. These are guys that, by the way, lead very large congregations, very strong as civil leaders, civic leaders, rather, in their community. I'm telling you what I know, not what I think. These guys are not only looking at the debates going, that's not what that guy said. They're constantly, the media is constantly spinning this thing because they need the narrative set. But people that are watching this stuff, we see what's going on. Obviously, it's working because the polls are reflecting that Donald is 18-19%, where blacks are saying, we're going to vote for this guy. The GOP has never seen that party, and in spite of Hillary Clinton's...
Let me jump in there, because, you know, if you watch CNN or CBS or ABC, you would be led to believe, because they give you a constant narrative, that only 1% of black voters are considering to vote for Donald Trump. I mean, that's what they say.
I know, that's what they're saying, but go to the rallies. I mean, go to the rallies and take a look for yourself, and you'll see. Look, I was one of the evangelical leaders that met with Donald Trump a few months ago in New York. I'm telling you, it was more than 1%, my friend. And these are—I just left a meeting. Forgive me, I'm not going to drop names here. I just left a meeting in D.C. A big public policy forum that's there. How about 97% of all the attendees were black? Does that sound like a 1%? And these, by the way, Steve, these are guys that lead very large, successful groups here.
I understand. Now, before I let you run here, Aubrey, and I want to continue this conversation as we will over the next few weeks, but you have a new video that was coming out. Where are we on that?
Well, we are going to release it on Friday afternoon. It's a done deal. I've already seen it. We've already ballooned it out there. It is phenomenal.
And the topic?
It will be out.
What's the topic?
About Hillary. Why Hillary should be denied. But you go out on my Facebook at Aubrey Shines, and just pull up my name out on your Facebook. You'll see it. It will be out on this Friday.
All right. There you have it. Go to Aubrey Shines' Facebook page. The video why Hillary has pulled the wool over the eyes of many, including the minority communities in this country. Pastor Bishop Aubrey Shines, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.